but toward Master Jehovah. Naturally, all in this house, from my sisters and brothers to the lowest scullery maid, hold Master Jehovah in the highest awe. For he is the pillar and scion of our world, the noblest of princes, most infallible of logicians, most compassionate of statesmen, and most penetrating of philosophers. Yet I, and others around me, easily saw that my affection far outstripped the common worship of the crowd. There were days when my sole hope in rising from my bed was that I might glimpse him passing in the hall, and any day his offices did not allow him to return home left me in the most profound despair. Knowing my duty, I tried to drive this love from my rebellious bosom, and that battle claimed my happiness and health, for I soon succumbed to a wasting sickness which consigned me to my bed and very nearly to my grave. I was at first unwilling to confess the cause of my illness, but I was not so impious a child as to stay silent before Madame when she pleaded with me with a mother's tears. With her encouragement, I revealed the truth to my fiancée, explaining that, while he retained forever a treasured quarter of my heart, my love for him had been transformed now to a daughter's devotion to her father, rather than a lady's for her lord. So kind and compassionate is the heart of that great man who was almost my husband, that he forgave me, accepting my filial affection in place of wifely love. And to save his newfound daughter from the grip of sickness, he agreed to go to Master Jehovah, whom he was accustomed to approaching with the intimacy of kin, and tell him of my love. The ways of my lord are mysterious. At first he answered nothing, and neither my newfound father nor Madame nor any in the house could understand his actions as he sequestered himself in his library, where none but the most trusted of servants were permitted to intrude. I, in my despair, slipped into a sleep so close to death that my nurses thought me a dozen times lost, but I was saved when Master Jehovah emerged from his isolation, and to the great jealousy of my sisters, who had never enjoyed more than a few syllables from his blessed lips, presented me with a commonplace book compiled by his own hand. Every page filled with quotations from the wisest ancients and most refined of commentators, interspersed with pieces of his own divine wisdom, explaining in 100 voices that appiest and archest rule, all but abandoned in this selfish age. The monastic calling. I saw at once my folly, that in the heat of youth I had imagined he could be the inspiration of a base and earthly love. That fire within myself, which I had mistaken for common passion, was in reality the first dim flickering of the truer flame of spiritual devotion, which, if fed with the good fuel of discipline and virtue, might be cultivated into some semblance of that ethereal brightness which marks mankind as the most fortunate of beasts. For we alone, of all the creatures of this earth, may aspire to the understanding of the divine. All rejoiced at my vocation, and my return from death's door, and Madame saw at once to my initiation into monastic life. I have lived so ever since, consecrated to my Lord God Jehovah in a chaste union far more powerful than any earthly marriage. And I have never strayed, nor thought to stray from this severe path, which is to me the greatest happiness. She fell into a prayer-like silence as she finished, the expression on her face a portrait of delicate, spiritual joy. They had no questions, or more likely, they brimmed with questions, but none they thought this madwoman could answer. Sir Eloise, please step away from the intruders. Carlyle and Thisbe were not the only ones who had been unable to interrupt the nun, but now that she had finished, both doors, main and hidden, opened, and gentlemen filled the entrances like floodwaters. I cannot remember how many there were, save 5 or 7, as you prefer, all costumed as the house demanded, silk at their throats, trim waistcoats, swallow-tailed jackets, breeches, rich fabrics with richer tailoring, and swords, half-decorative, at every belt. Their breeches were tight, far more precisely tailored than the sexless fashions of the outside world, and yesteryear's style made the conspicuous lumps of their sexual members catch the eye, even on those who had nothing more to display than a woman's crotch bone. Yes, reader, half these gentlemen were female in body, breasts tucked snugly under the waistcoats. But with such rearing, there was no more of the female in them than there is canine loyalty in a pup raised among wolves. The fiercest, though not the largest, led the pack, his coat and breeches black, his waistcoat copper-embroidered green, his skin European pale with hints of reddish fire in his hair. "Chevalier," Eloise greeted him. "Is there a problem?" "These two have entered under false pretenses," he explained. "What?" Thisbe cried in false dismay. "Oh, I forgot to share my credentials. How silly of me." She began to call them from her tracker. The Chevalier loomed closer, and the others with him, like vultures around carrion. "No one would give you this address. I got it from Officer Occam Senir. I'm..." "No, you did not." The Chevalier smiled wide. "You'll come with us, please. I'm running a background check on..." "You will graciously consent to come with us." Eloise interposed herself between the censaire and the marauders like a fence of frail wicker to stop a charging bull. "These two have been consigned to my care, Chevalier. We are waiting together for Master Jehovah." "Then allow me to relieve you of that burden, Sir Eloise." The Chevalier marshaled a smile whose malice impressed even Thisbe. "I would not wish this petty affair to keep you from your sacred duties." No sculpted angel has ever smiled so serenely. "It is no burden, Chevalier." "A distraction, then," he corrected. "One unworthy of your time." The nun's eyes ranged the others, the magic of her gaze driving eager hands away from sword hilts and making smirks pregnant with mischief to grow sober. "The priest is sick," she announced. "It is among the foremost of my charitable duties to help the sick." "Then, good sister, you must trust me to see that duty performed in due course. But I must also see foremost to my primary duty, to guard this house, which is my charge when Brother Dominic is absent." Before Eloise could answer, a shout and fast feet thundered down the hall outside. "Sir Eloise! Sir Eloise! Dans la salle de douale! Senator Chung est gravement blessé." "In the dueling hall, Senator Chung is seriously wounded." She opened the door at once. "Gravement? Seriously?" "Oui," answered the messenger, a tearful maid of 13. "Et tous les docteurs sont occupés en bas. Viens vite." "Yes, and all the doctors are busy below. Come quickly." I had no doubt the Chevalier had arranged the convenient timing of the injury, but the same laws of courtesy which would not permit the men to roughhouse in the sister's presence also would not allow her to ignore a soul in need. "You must excuse me, Father, Mademoiselle Sanir." She bobbed a curtsy. "I am needed elsewhere urgently. I shall return to check on you when next I am free." She made the Chevalier meet her eyes, not easy eyes to face. "You will take proper care of these two, as Master Jehovah's guests?" The Chevalier raised his gloved hand as if to take an oath. "I shall see to them according to my duty." The little sister is no fool. "May I have your word, then, Chevalier? No harm will come to them." Her persistence grated on him, like a song once pleasant which takes too long to end. "Very well, you have my word. Now run along, sister, blood does not wait." She offered the stranded pair a reassuring smile. "You may trust the Chevalier to keep his word. Good luck to you. I'll keep you in my prayers." With that, she rushed away, and decorum with her. You have never seen such dark grins on a pack of men. "Now," the Chevalier began, "where were we? Ah, yes, unlawful intrusion. Hey, look, the priest's a cousin." Three of the pack pawed at the loose tails of Carlyle's cousin's wrap as circling bandits play with the skirts of a maiden they hunger to unwrap. She's definitely not supposed to be here. Here again, reader, I must apologize, since I have accustomed you to assigning Carlyle he. Cousins are she by default in that house, and the exception for Carlyle had not yet been ordered. Are you enjoying straying out of bounds, cousin? One reached as if to stroke Carlyle's hanging hair, but instead snatched the disabled tracker from his ear and dangled it just out of reach. Hey, Thisbe cried, off guard. That's so not okay. The Chevalier carried a cane as well as a sword, and wielded it with expert menace. I fear it is not your place to make rules in another's house, Mademoiselle Intruder. Thisbe rose, and with her boots was almost tall enough to face the Chevalier eye to eye. Red zone or no, taking a tracker is black law illegal. The Chevalier looked to the others, and all laughed raucously, as if she had made a brilliant joke. I don't think you're the one who wants to call the law in here, Mademoiselle Intruder, into a level one Romanovan Alliance security compound whose unlawful breach is punishable by... He looked to his compatriots. What is it for humanists? 5 to 10? 10 to 15 years or 500,000 euros? One supplied. The answer freshened the roses in the Chevalier's cheeks. Of course, if you meant no harm by the intrusion, we might overlook it, if appropriately persuaded. Like Leslie, Thisbe has no practice dodging when one of these creatures swoops in serpent-quick to kiss her hand. Blush erupted, intense enough to show on her dark Indian cheeks, and her poise changed too, standing straighter, as if remembering her own anatomy beneath her silk suit and her pride in it. She looked to Carlyle, who had pulled his feet up onto his chair as if it were a life raft with sharks circling round. What persuasion do you have in mind? She asked. The Chevalier leaned close, closing his eyes a moment as he tested the scent of Thisbe's shampoo. Let us, just you and I, go see if we can't find one of the household polylaws. Surely they can advise us on the situation, and who knows? Perhaps we'll come up with something on our own along the way. He raised his hand to stroke her cheek, while his body leaned close enough for their thighs to share warmth. Thisbe froze, as Mercer Mardy froze once, hoping the killer would not spot her in the shadows. Thisbe, Carlyle urged, call on your tracker. We need help. If glares could kill, this would have been Carlyle's earthly end. You doubt my word, Sensei. The Chevalier turned on him. I promised Sister Eloise that you would not be harmed. Thisbe, Carlyle tried again. Thisbe, the Chevalier repeated, planting a fresh kiss on her hand and others further up her arm in an inching line. A superb name, Thisbe. More parents should be brave enough to name their daughters after women men have died for, don't you think? Thoughts and adrenaline mixed in Thisbe's mind as the inching kisses crept so slowly toward her throat. Fly, says Virtue. Knock his hand away. Kick him in that too conspicuous crotch. Fight. Call, as trackers can, the fierce and instant law whose agents will swoop from the heaven's angel harsh and whisk you away from this strange man whose blush is rising to match yours. Thisbe smiled. What about my sensei? The Chevalier's eyes rolled across to Carlyle as to an unwanted sibling. The cousin is sick, is she not? Let her recover here. My compatriots will give her the very best of care. Thisbe, Carlyle cried out as three of them dug their fists into his clothes as if to rip the wrapping from a birthday package. We have to get out of here. Stop! That sensei belongs to Giulia Doria Pamphili. I was so out of breath as I burst in that I could not keep my words from becoming a shout. I made it in time, barely, but I had made it in time. Mycroft? Thisbe, Carlyle, and the Chevalier called my name in unison, then eyed one another in some surprise. Carlyle is Julia's apprentice. I repeated, still panting, and this humanist is a privileged courtier of His Grace the Duc de Thouars. They would not want their creatures spoiled.